Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Mark Driver from Rathvinny Vineyards. How are you, Mark?
I'm very good. Nice to see you, Chris.
Excellent. It's been quite a while since I've been down at Rathvinny Vineyards. It's, about 3 years, I think.
Yeah, lots happened then.
Yeah, lots have happened. Still not much wine out there, but a lot of things have been going on.
Well, there's a lot of wine in the tank this year, so which is good news. So all our tanks are full this year. We ran out of space, actually, at the end of harvest.
Oh, perfect.
So, it's a good situation to be in.
I think last time we came down was about 3 years ago, and you just had your winery fitted. You'd had some grapes in, I think, from your first harvest, but you'd been a little bit disappointed with the volume because I think you got knocked around by the wind. Is that right?
Yeah, I think 2014 was still quite a tricky year because the flowering was quite late. Spring was quite late. It was a really cold winter, that 13-14 winter. And the same with the 13 as well. So everything arrived quite late. So, you know, things were a little bit disappointing. But I think that's partly because of 2012. So 2012 was that really wet, cold, miserable summer. So the vines didn't really develop as quickly as we expected. 13 was then incredibly dry, if you remember. And then 14 was okay, but it was very late. So 14 was a little bit disappointing. So, you know, we got some grapes and we managed to get the winery working and we got the presses working, which is good. But then we really had to rely on 15. 15 was our first reasonable year.
Yep.
And then 16 was a multiple on that. And then we've just finished harvest about 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we managed to pick nearly three times as much as we'd picked in 2016. So 17 has been a really good year for us.
Yeah. You showed me the different lots in your storage facility.
Yes.
And you go, 2015 was like three or four bins, you know, looked like something I'd drink in a week. Yeah. Shows how enthusiastic I am.
Yeah. No, you're my number one client, man. You can drink that much. Yeah.
But not, yeah, you know, I'm being facetious. But then you can see the size increasing coming through. So because you are a new vineyard and really, you know, you've got that huge lag of storage and all this sort of carry on. One of the things that when we first interviewed you were really keen on was the fact you'd bought your canes or whatever. They were bigger canes, so therefore you were hoping to get some grapes off in your second year because of that.
Yeah.
Whereas most people normally say, look, it takes 3 years,
yes,
the grapes or the vines in the ground before you get anything off. Do you think that was a good idea in the end, or do you think maybe you should have just gone for the old standard stuff?
Well, it depends on the areas. So in certain areas, the high grafted vines have done incredibly well.
That's high graft. That's what it is.
That's so. The tall trunks. So you've got a 90. You've got the graft union is at 90 centimeters above the ground. So you're pretty much at the fruiting wire. So if you imagine low graft, so typical vines come on a 30-centimeter graft.
Yep.
So the graft union is just above the ground,
mm-hmm,
which is perfect if you've got low trellising, which they have across most of Europe. So, you know, France through to northern Spain, you're quite typically low graft, because they used to use oxen cart and oxen. You have to the yoke of the ox had to go run across the top of the vines.
Oh, okay.
Which is why the vines were typically about 1.2 meters tall, and therefore you had about 1.2 meters between the vines, which was enough to get a couple of oxen, and you could run a couple of oxen up and down just to help with irrigation. Well, not irrigation, but just all kinds of working of the soil in between the vines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we're in the 21st century, and we use tractors. So typically we want slightly wider row spacing.
Yep.
So we're typically about 2.1 meters, 2.2, and then we're using high trellising. So using high graft is what they do in Germany. So the Germans are quite modern vineyards, and most vineyards in the New World are high graft. Mm-hmm. And so they're, or if they are using low graft, they're, you know, they're using high trellising, so 2.2, 2.1, 2.2 meters. So the, what the high graft allows you to do, it's a very long answer for this, but
yeah, that's all right, it's all good.
But the, what the high graft allows you to do is get onto the fruiting wire in year one.
Yep.
Okay. So what we found in certain areas, so the, as you came up the driveway on the left-hand side,
yep,
there's a big area there of Pinot Meunier.
Yep.
In it's only 2 years old, and it produced 6.5 tons of fruit this year. Really good quality fruit. Good sugar levels, good acidity, good balanced acidity, but really good sugar levels. And that's in its second year. And that's from an area which is roughly about a hectare or so, one and a bit hectares.
A lot of it seems to be facing south, but there seems to be a little bit that seems to be sort of northwest almost.
Yeah, it's mainly, actually, it's more sort of east, northeast type facing.
Yep.
So it, you know, to produce that sort of yield from that sort of area in year two is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think, and that's just with half cane. So next year there'll be double Guillot in across the whole of that spot. So, you know, you can imagine they could be producing twice as much,
yeah.
Which is, you know, which is great for us. So high graft works really well in certain locations. What we found in certain other areas where, as you know, certain areas of our vineyard are more exposed to wind and the elements than others. And there we found that actually low graft has tended to do as well as the high graft. So in year three, we're typically getting the same sort of yield, small yields. And then four and five, they're typically catching up.
Okay, so they're more exposed, and therefore that's just slowing down the fruiting, is it?
Yeah, and also the depth of the soil. So in the deeper soil areas, we found that the where you have soil which is greater than 30 centimeters, you know, when you've got half a meter or more of soil,
mm-hmm.
and typically our soils are really thin because we've got this sort of classic south down soil where you've got a very low cap of soil over the top of chalk.
Yep.
But in where you've got deeper soil, we're finding that actually the higher grafts are doing a lot better.
I presume that's at the bottom of the hills, is it?
Yeah,
that's normally where the soils get thicker.
Typically, it's a little bit towards the bottom. But certain areas, so the area by the Flint Barns, mm-hmm. Down in that area, the high grafts are done incredibly well. So we've got some Pinot Noir there, the 777 and the 667, which are only 3 years old, and they're producing really good yields this year in their third year.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you wouldn't necessarily expect from a low graft, yeah. But you can get from a high graft.
Okay.
So it's really some and some. I'm still an advocate. I get all kinds of stick about it, all kinds of people telling me, you must be mad, because of trunk disease and this and that and the other. But actually, I think there are all kinds of benefits to having high graft.
Yeah, you're not worried that, because obviously below the graft, you've got some sort of American rootstock.
Yeah.
And then above the graft, you've got your Vitis vinifera, which is your sort of grape variety stock.
Yeah, that's great.
If the grafting's quite high, could you find that you're getting canes coming off the American rootstock interfering with it, or is it really quite obvious when you're doing your winter pruning that it's you're not going to get the wrong cane? Because imagine that'd be a disaster. Yeah.
But this is the other advantage of having high graft, because the high graft have already spent they've spent 1 year in the nursery up to 90 centimeters. So they've all been bud rubbed and they've had their buds all removed. So therefore you don't have those sort of little water shoots, those little shoots off the trunk. So you don't have to do any of that, any bud rubbing off high graft, which saves quite a lot of time. It's quite a lot of labor involved in doing that. And so you don't have to train a tutor or a cane up from the low graft to get up to your fruiting wire, because you're already there.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So you're going straight off. You get the occasional little shoot off the lower part of the always. Graft union, but yeah, you can see it. They're completely different.
Okay.
And they just get knocked off during pruning.
That sort of was something that came up, and we talked last time, I think, about your windbreaks.
Yeah.
And you'd put in these temporary windbreaks, which look quite nice.
Yes.
I thought they were a final solution, but you're saying now you've got trees now.
Yeah. Well, we had planted the trees anyway, but trees take longer to grow. So the trees are typically taking 5 or 6 years to get up to a level, you know, up to sort of 6 meters or so high, which is when they start to become effective as windbreaks. So we chose these temporary windbreaks, which are used in a lot of orchards, actually, in Kent. Mm-hmm. And they stop about 50% of the wind. So they slow the wind down, and they help. Therefore, they help the vines to develop. Because really, the wind is the enemy of the vine, really. So you want to slow the wind down. You don't want to stop it completely,
yep.
Because otherwise you end up with a lot of disease pressure. Because,
yeah.
You know, we're quite northerly, and it's quite wet in England. And we get a lot of rain during the summer.
Yep.
So, you know, it's hot and then wet. And so what you find is that you get a lot of disease pressure. So you want that wind, you want that breeze through the vineyard. You don't want to stop it completely, but you want to slow it down.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what we've done with those temporary windbreaks. They've allowed the trees to grow. And what we're finding is that most of the windbreaks now, the trees are above the temporary windbreaks. And in another couple of years, I think we'll start to have that discussion about taking some of them down and moving them to other areas where we're developing.
The windbreaks?
The windbreaks.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the temporary side.
Yeah, okay. And what sort of trees are you using for windbreaks? Is it poplar?
It's a mixture. We've used a lot of alder. Alder's doing really well. It's mainly Italian alder, which is a thicker leaf. But they have quite a vertical shoot type structure. So similar to poplar. So poplars are quite good because birds don't sit on them, which is why, you know, why a lot of farmers like them as windbreaks. Because if you look at the branches, they go straight up.
Yeah.
Italian alder does the same. It shoots up. So the branches are up, so therefore birds don't sit on them. They don't tend to nest in them. But we've used a lot of hawthorn, real mixture. We've got some field maple. We've got some poplar. Got various things which are growing. But out of all of them, I'd say the alder, Italian alder, is probably doing the best on our soil.
I don't know that plant, but I presume it's like a poplar, you know, yeah, the way you've described
it. You can see it because it's the ones which are... They're still quite dark green at this time of the year, and they've got little catkins on them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a pretty looking tree.
Are you going to manage the height, or do they naturally go to a particular height?
I think we will.
You'll end up with shading and all sorts of problems.
Eventually we will manage the height, but there's quite a distance. So we allow for enough distance between those trees and the first row of vines, so that they shouldn't really cause much shading.
Yeah. Have you got any other, like, one of the big things at the moment is New Zealand's gone to sustainable viticulture. Mm-hmm. I've just read recently that Centimillion is now insisting you're either sustainable, organic, or biodynamic. Yeah. Do you follow any of those practices, or do you plan on following those practices?
Yeah, we use a lot of best practice, really, from the organic world. So Cameron, who's our vineyard manager, he worked on an organic vineyard in New Zealand, so he's brought a lot of those best practices over. But we've got to recognize that we are, you know, we're a long way north. And as I said, we have quite damp summers. So therefore, we need to be able to use a lot of other tools within the armory.
But you're not looking at sort of sustainable viticulture then, which is more about minimizing inputs as opposed to... Not that you've got many inputs at the moment. Well, you're starting to spray and all that sort of stuff now.
No, you obviously have to have a spraying program, but you can use a lot of organic practices and a lot of organic sprays. So one of the biggest sprays that we apply is copper and sulfur, mm-hmm. which is organic, which is used within organic vineyards.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, we do use some other sprays. We use a little bit of herbicide to keep down the weeds below the vines, but we use a lot of other sustainable practices. I always think sustainability is an interesting question, because, you know, are you sustainable or are you organic? Because sustainability means that you can survive, and you can actually make money out of something. And, you know, that's always going to be the key, that you can sustain the business.
Exactly.
So we use a lot of very green practices, and those include using things like compost. So we use compost from our local refuse collection point, because they bring in all the household waste,
mm-hmm.
and they compost that up. We buy it in by the ton load, sort of 50 tons at a time, and we use a lot of that underneath the vines for nutrients. And then we use a lot of other sort of green practices. So, for example, seaweed. A liquid seaweed we use as a green fertilizer.
Yeah, yeah.
Very late on in the season, really helps sustain the leaves, keeps the leaves on the vine into October, it's organic.
Recently, there's been some pretty nasty frosts. Have you had to install any frost management system yet, or how are you managing frost? Because frost is always a risk in the UK.
Yeah. Frost has been a dreadful problem across the whole of Northern Europe.
Yeah, especially this year.
Especially this year. So, you know, even vineyards in Rioja have lost some 60% of their crop this year because of the late frost in April. I think England managed to dodge the bullet, actually, of the frost. A lot of vineyards were frosted, but they were very, when the shoots were really small, therefore they managed to regrow, and mm-hmm. they managed to get, you know, reasonable quantities of fruit. We don't have late frosts here. We had about, on that really bad day in April, I think it's April the 26th or 7th, we had about 1% of the vines right down the bottom of the valley were affected.
Yeah.
The rest were okay.
Okay.
And the main reason for that is we're only about 3 miles from the sea. So I think it's sort of, this year is sort of vindication of the site selection. It's a great site. We avoid all those late frosts. We've got a great aspect and great soils, great climate. So I'm very happy that we managed to avoid those.
And have you got any frost protection for the vineyard?
No, we don't, because we don't get them. So,
famous last words.
No. So this year was the worst frost in something like 26 or 30 years. You know, for a long time.
Yeah, it was quite. It was beyond
vicious,
ground frost. Yeah,
vicious. It was an air frost, and we didn't get it. So last year there was a really bad frost. It was -6 in parts of Sussex, about sort of 20 miles north of us, and parts of the Weald and other parts of the UK. And it was +2 here. So, you know, I think it's just an indication of where we are. It's just that proximity to the sea. We're only about 3 miles from the sea. It's the slope. It's the fact that there's a view, there's an ability for the frost to be able to leak out and go down the valley, down Cradle Valley, and get out into the Cookmere and roll out into the sea. And all those things coming together really helped mitigate frost protection.
Good luck, because when it comes, it's a pain.
It's been shocking. And I feel for a lot of these people who have really suffered this year. You know, I know, for example, parts of Sancerre, they're talking about, you know, can they be sustainable? Can they continue? They've had 3 bad frosts in a row.
Mm.
You know, there are parts of Chablis which have been really badly affected.
Yeah.
And then there are parts of Burgundy where I read that they're now putting in smoke production to try and to stop the sun from coming through and burning the fruit or burning the buds in the early part in after a frost, which is one of the biggest problems.
No, I don't know that.
So for example, if you look in parts of the New World, so in New Zealand where they do a lot of irrigation.
Yep.
Parts of New Zealand where they do irrigation, and parts of South America, they actually spray when you've got a frost, because the frost actually protects the bud.
Yeah, yeah, you spray water on it.
Spray water.
It's like an igloo. As it freezes, it actually releases heat when water freezes.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep piling water on,
then you're okay.
You're okay, right. Yeah.
But it's the sun the next morning which comes through and burns the buds. Burns the actual shoots, so you know that's that as far as I understand it, is what some people are trying to mitigate against. So therefore, they're putting smoke in. So that's why I think in a lot of parts of France and Chablis, etc., they were burning straw down the bottom of the valleys to create a smoke haze to try and mitigate those issues.
Oh, okay, because normally people use burners during the frost to try and warm the air up.
Well, that's good for the ground frost, but when you've got an air frost...
Yeah, no, it's no good.
It's no good.
Okay, all right. Yeah. All right, Mark, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I think we'll find out about what you've been doing in terms of infrastructure next week. All right, mate?
Yeah.
Cheers very much.
Good.